stay with Chet for a little while. Mm-hmm. You said that he's an idol and a mentor. And he was a friend.
Well, we became really like father and son towards the end of his life. What not many people realize is that from 1967 till the day he died, Chet was a cancer survivor 5 times. He was a tough guy, and he loved feeling well, and he hated being sick, and he was sick a lot. And when I look back on his body of work, I am amazed how did he do it all and try to survive all that treatment and cancer and all that. It was really amazing what he did. Well, he built a little granny flat on the side of his house, and when I came to record, he said, "I'd like you to stay with us if you would. I've got a little flat here. It's very private, and you can have your own bathroom and kitchen and all that, and we can just come down and work in the studio during the day or whatever." So that worked really well. And I enjoyed it. And every time I came to Nashville, I'd stay out at Chet and Leona's house. And one day he said to me, "You know, I really didn't build this for visitors." He said, "I actually built it for myself." He said, "When I get old and sick, I don't want to be a burden on my wife. And so I'm going to have 24-hour care, and I'm going to live down here." And that's exactly what happened.
Is that right?
Yeah. But I had some of those rare experiences that it was like being in a movie, you know. My hero invites me to stay at his house, and then every morning he comes down and says, "Come on, get up, let's have coffee." And he's telling me stories that he probably hadn't told anybody else.
Can you remember the moment when Idol became friend?
Yeah, it was straight away. It was pretty much straight away, because Chet was the kind of guy that he made you feel so comfortable. Like, for instance, if you can imagine this, the first time that I went to America was 1980, and I spent my life savings. When I got back to Australia, I literally had nothing in my pocket and nothing in the bank, zero. But I would have done it again in a heartbeat, you know. It was really worth it. I arrive in Nashville, and I get to go down to his office, and I'm waiting downstairs with my little nylon string guitar and a photo album of pictures of me from when I was a kid, holding up his albums and just typical fan stuff, you know. And if you can imagine this, all of a sudden, my life flashes before me. All my fears come to meet me. And I suddenly start thinking, "Oh, my God, what if I start playing and I just sound like a bad version of him? He'll probably be like, you know, he won't like that." And so I become overcome by fear. And he comes down the stairs, and he looked at me. He must have seen it in me. And he put his arm around me, and he said, "Do you want to pick a little?" And I said, "Yeah, okay." So we went into this side office, and I start playing me and Bobby McGee, pretty similar to the version that I learned from his recording, right? And he doesn't join in straight away. He's listening. And as I'm playing through the first verse of the thing and into the first chorus, he starts pointing at me and he goes, "I didn't do that. I didn't do that." You know, like that. And then he joins in and plays, and then we play about 3 or 4 more songs. And all the time he was telling me, "Oh, you know, I didn't do that there," and blah, blah, blah. And it was his way of saying I had my own thing, you know.